When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Quick word here for Amigo Energy. Amigo Energy reminds you, if you want to save money on your energy bill, who doesn't want to do that? They've got a solution for you. You sign up for Amigo Energy Basics 24. You'll receive a $50 bill credit exclusively for Soccer Matters listeners. Now, if you're moving, call Amigo Energy. If you're up for renewal, call Amigo Energy. Look them up, switch, and save money. Who doesn't want to do that? Did you know Amigo Energy is a public utility commission, 5-star rated provider? That's right. You get great rates, great service from Amigo Energy. Don't delay. It's www.amigoenergy.com/soccermatters or call 888-995-9299, 888-995-9299. So from a great sponsor to a great women's soccer player and analyst, you know her as Julie Foudy. She joins us now. Julie, thank you very much, as always, for coming on the show.
My pleasure, Glenn.
All right. It's always fun having you on. Now, I want to first, and we'll get this one out of the way. I first want to commend you for calling out Hope Solo, because I think sometimes people are afraid to do that. And I think what I saw was you kind of opened the door of confidence for some of the national team players to get it out that they weren't actually happy about the way she handled the loss to Sweden. Look, I know it's only a word, it's coward, but is that in the Olympic spirit? And that seemed a little disturbing to me based on the fact that the rest of her teammates were very dignified and graceful in defeat.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that even in the heat of a moment, and I've heard people say, oh, they shouldn't make athletes, you know, have to walk off the field, straight from the field and do interviews. But, you know, that's all sports, all athletes. And it's never easy, but we've seen so many examples of people in the heat of a moment. I'll give one is, you know, I've never been more impressed with Abby Wambach after the 2011, remember that heartbreaking loss and penalty kicks to Japan?
Yep.
And this is a World Cup again, you know, in 2011, she had never won a World Cup, and she had said, like, I would give my left leg to win a World Cup. I would give anything. And I remember her walking off the field and giving the most gracious interview I've ever seen, which, as we know, as players, is so hard to do. So I get it. Losing is no fun, but clearly, you know, you've got to either just walk away entirely and say nothing, or gather yourself and get it out. So I just felt it needed to be said, because that's not what represents this team.
Yeah, you guys spent a long time building a culture. You want that carried on, right? Because, look, you know, that was one of the things that you and all your great teammates, and we could name all the names, prided yourselves on, was this great bonding and team culture. And, look, not every locker room's perfect. There are jealousies, there's no doubt, but if you cross the line, you cross the line representing everybody else. And to be honest with you, I kind of felt as though, you know, she's representing me wearing a U.S. jersey, right? Don't we hear everybody around the world going, you play for the shirt?
Yeah, you play for the flag and the crest. And really, we took great pride in, you know, that's an example you're extending on to other kids. And you want that example to be an exemplary one, in terms of it representing, you know, not just you, but the team and the brand and everyone else well. So yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, that's why you heard some of her teammates come out and say it wasn't okay. And she's not the first person to lose a game where, you know, a team has played away that you don't like. You know, how many teams have bunkered in against us over the years? So, I mean, I could have understood if she said, I don't like that. I don't think it should be rewarded. I don't think they should go on. It's not a positive play, as we've said about Mourinho for how many years, right?
You're right.
So there's a million different ways she could have said her displeasure with Pia's style. And, of course, you don't want to see Sweden winning like that, but it was smart for that moment, and clearly it served them well in that tournament.
Julie Foudy joining us here on ESPN 97.5. Well, the thing that's comical to me is it's not like you didn't know it was coming, right? And as you just mentioned, it's not like it hasn't happened before. So, I mean, this was no mystery that Sweden was going to defend deep and you were going to have to try to break them down.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was what made people scratch their heads. Like, what? Come on. You know this game. That's a common tactic. That's what I think is so weird about it. I mean, but spinning it forward, Glenn, the thing that that still eats at me a little bit is, you know, and I get the frustration of what happened with the termination of her contract and the suspension and, you know, how she must feel isolated and alone, and that must be another raw feeling. But I just don't see any acknowledgement that she had any role in that. You know, that video came out, her statement came out, you know, how dare they after 17 years of service. And again, it's that tone which I have never, ever responded to in all of the time that I've covered Hope of, you know, I'm the victim here. And once again, that's kind of what I read into it. And I just wish at some stage she'd say, maybe part of this is my fault, actually. Because clearly that suspension wasn't for just the coward statement. I mean, U.S. Soccer made it very clear that she was on a zero-tolerance plan based on past behavior, and they had many conversations about this.
Well, she set the tone early, didn't she, with the whole Zika thing on the Internet? I mean, to me, that on Twitter and social media or Instagram, wherever she put it, that to me already was telling me that, look, hey, I want attention. I'm going to start it off by getting attention. And, you know, I'm kind of thinking self here because this is a big platform for individuals as well. And I think there's real restraint and respect you have to have for your teammates to not cross over that line. So she set the tone wanting the spotlight on her, which... to me, right before the Olympics, when you're going there as a group to try and accomplish something, I thought that was a major league mistake and very selfish, quite frankly.
Yeah, and part of my continued frustration again with Hope is, you know, it becomes a topic that we in the media have to talk about. People say, oh, you talk about it all the time and you're hammering her. It's like, well, we of course have to address it, you know. And the sad thing is then you're talking about that rather than other players or highlighting other things or talking about the good that's happening with that team or even the bad of what, you know, needs to get better with them. I mean, have we talked once? I don't know about you. I haven't talked once since the Olympics about why they went out so soon, why they couldn't break down that bunker, what happened to that group. So that's the thing that bums me out is, she sucks the conversation into that black hole.
Yeah. Well, let's change the subject then. We can do that.
Yeah, how?
Since you're here, we're closing the door on Hope Solo. And by the way, the video to me is totally contrived, but we won't even go there. The video is just like a staged setup thing, which, you know, I don't know how it's even that believable. But let's go on to something positive. Allie Krieger comes back right away, pretty much after a little bit of a break, plays for the Washington Spirit. She comes out. Says a whole bunch of great things about the importance of the NWSL. Why didn't we see more of that? That was a real positive to me.
Yeah. I know there was no policy in place from U.S. Soccer, which I think was a mistake on their part, in terms of in writing, putting something down of you've got to get back to your teams by this date. And I know that became a bit of an issue for a lot of teams, especially you guys down in Houston. I don't know why they didn't do that, you know, and I know they also are trying to do the right thing and that they want to honor that the players have tried and that they need time, which I also get. So it's a delicate balance that, but, you know, the problem is you have some who come back right away and those who are like, I need more time. And the ones who say they need more time get killed, you know, for taking the time.
Yeah. So, you know, in the case of Carly Lloyd, I guess we can't be too critical.
You know, it's hard without knowing what, I mean, I know she said I had some personal issues I was dealing with. I honestly don't feel like I'm in a place to judge whether that's wrong or right, because I don't know. I haven't talked to her. You know, who knows if she was fighting some nagging little things too coming off. I mean, for her to put the minutes that she did in at the Olympics, which was amazing to me after coming off that 3-month absence. And really her first start was that game we called Glenn right before the Olympics.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, and then she's logging 120 minutes in that overtime game as well in the quarter. So I'm sure there's considerable fatigue given that she hadn't been playing, but I think what they will have hopefully learned is that they need to set a policy across the board and say, look, we've got to agree on this and everyone needs to dive in on this. And yes, you're tired. We get it. But we only have, you know, this many months left of this league and we want to promote it as best we can. And let's grind it out. We'll give you some time on the back end.
Julie Foudy joining us here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, ESPN analyst, as well as legendary U.S. women's national team player from these past great teams with so many great players. All right, so what did happen in the Olympics? What did you see happen? You know, based on, you know, the preparatory games, we saw a lot. What do you think happened in this tournament? Do you think was just one game on one day that sunk the U.S., or was it something deeper?
No, I mean, I don't think they played their best that entire tournament. And, you know, with the World Cup, they had some time to get into it. I mean, I remember I looked back a year that summer of 15, and those first 3-4 games were awful. Do you remember that at the World Cup?
Yep.
Until they made the switch with Carly playing in that higher position, because Lauren Holliday got that red card, so they had to kind of switch the midfield around. And then all of a sudden that unlocked some offense for the team, and they started pressing higher and but, you know, a couple factors. They don't play, you know, a game they don't really need against Colombia, but Hope lets a howler in, which we've never really seen her do, and then lets that second free kick in. And defensively was always the area that was their backbone, and yet we just, you know, on set pieces, especially at this Olympics, they looked very susceptible. And we weren't talking about the group stage as much because, you know, look, they got through on top like they were supposed to. They beat a good French team. But then really, you know, when you look at that Sweden game in that quarterfinal, and this was my concern all tournament, and one of the gambles I think that Jill Ellis took that didn't pay off is you bring Megan Rapinoe in, you know, off an ACL surgery. She's only had a few touches of the ball at all. Right, I mean, she's 7 months post-op, and we know, Glenn, how hard that is to come back from. And you may look okay in practice, but to be game fit for more than 30 minutes is a tough ask. So you have that on the roster. You had Rapinoe on the roster. You had Tobin Heath, who had been coming off injury and hadn't been playing as much. Morgan Bryan, a lot of injury this year, and Carly Lloyd. So your four main midfielders, I thought, coming in. Carly Lloyd had taken 3 months off for her knee. Weren't at or near 100%. And I think you get to that quarterfinal match against Sweden, and when they bunker in and you need some legs to get around them or some creativity, they didn't have it. And I don't agree with the positional change of Tobin Heath going to right back at one point during the game. I can't remember what minute, which had been consistently their most creative player on the field, and now you're putting her in at right back. And, you know, you saw Dunn come in and do very well. I think she could have gotten more minutes. And, you know, and you look at that team, and I'm thinking, you know, when Mallory Pugh, your 18-year-old, is one of your best consistently good players, that's a bit of an issue, no? When an 18-year-old looks pretty composed. So maybe that's a great sign, but I also think it's a sign that they need to inject some, which Jill knows, they need to inject some creativity into that final third. I mean, because there's too many teams that are just going to be doing what Pia did. And we know that they're going to do that.
How about Germany winning the goal? What were your thoughts on them?
No, I actually didn't get to see that game. because I was, of course, covering other things at the Olympics.
Sure.
I was more pleased. I was super bummed, actually, that Brazil didn't make it onto the final. You know, first I was super bummed, of course, that, you know, I had pictured a USA-Brazil semifinal in the Maracanã. And how awesome that would have been for women's soccer in that country to have that showcase of the game in the Maracanã. I think it had been 10 years since the women's team had even played there, to give any indication of how little they support the women's team. And when the U.S. went out, I thought, okay, I'm rooting for Brazil because they need this. You know, they need for their federation to continue to support them. They've gotten really so little support since we played them in the final in 2004, when I thought we should have been killed that day, and we ended up pulling out a gold medal. And they don't make it through, and Sweden bunkers even more against them. So I thought I just didn't want to see Sweden rewarded for that conservative play, for that cowardly play, Glenn. So I was actually pleased that Germany was able to pull it out.
Well, Julie, as always, I thank you very much for coming on the show, and keep up the great work. Thank you for your insight into all this, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, Glenn. Thanks, buddy.
All right. That's the one and only Julie Foudy, ESPN analyst, U.S. Women's soccer legendary player. She joined us. We'll take a quick break here. It's a 7-Up break. We're back with more.
This is DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the Houston Texans, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We roll on here tonight. The Dynamo will take on Chivas of Guadalajara on Sunday, so they have an off weekend in Major League Soccer. It is an international week, and it's a great time to bring in, as always, ESPN analyst, former New England Revolution and U.S. national team striker, Taylor Twellman. Taylor, thank you very much, as always, for coming on the program.
No problem, Glenn. What's going on?
Nothing. I'm glad to have you on the show, and you know, it's always fun to banter back and forth and get your opinion on things. And we'll talk a little bit about the College Cup in December at the end of this interview. But let's start it off with Major League Soccer. And you know, as we're getting into the home stretch here, what to you is beginning to jump out here as it begins to get sorted out for the stretch run?
Well, I think what's jumped out to me, and I'm going to put even last year into this discussion point, is that how prevalent the parity is in Major League Soccer. I think with expansion, especially to Orlando and New York City, there's really no bad teams in Major League Soccer, but on the other side of it, there's no great teams. You know, there's very few teams, I think, that you go into every weekend saying they're going to win. And even when you look at the LA Galaxies and the Seattle Sounders through the last 4 or 5 years, where you look at their rosters that were, you know, pretty dominant of stars, you can't say they were going to go into any given weekend and automatically win. And I think that stands out to me. When you look at 2016, I think the injuries to LA Galaxy it throws the whole Western Conference up for grabs now. The fact that Steven Gerrard's out with a hamstring, Yelly Van Damme is now out.
Yeah,
they sell Nigel de Jong or terminate his contract, however they want to word it. I think that is very interesting because, for me and my money, they're the deepest team in the league when everyone's healthy, but now they're not healthy. So does that depth get tested a little too soon? And what do they do? And then you obviously look, you know, what's going on in the Eastern Conference. The New England Revolution have been a huge disappointment with the amount of talent they have. Toronto looked like they were going to make a real run for the number one seed. Now Jovinko's out for 3 to 4 weeks. I still think here we are, August 31st, September 1st, and there's still a lot more questions than answers, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah, and let's not forget about Jozy Szardis out in Los Angeles, supposedly going to miss the remainder of 2016. Broken fifth metatarsal in his right foot.
Yeah, I mean, that's an injury that bothers L.A. as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Jozy Szardis, with the age of Robbie Keane, Jazzy Zardes is, you know, that speed factor. And if you ask me, and many people will laugh or chuckle, I think Jazzy Zardes is actually their most valuable player because he's the one of the few players on that team that can stretch the back line, use their pace. Because with Giovanni Dos Santos, with Robbie Keane, Steven Gerrard, everything's being played in front of a back four or a back six, if you want to include the defensive midfielders of the position. So Giazzi being out for the remainder of the year, that may be the toughest obstacle, I think, for LA to overcome.
Yeah, what an amount of injuries they have just, it's just all gone south there. Taylor Twellman joining us, ESPN analyst. Now, you said there's no bad teams in Major League Soccer. I think some people might want to contend you on that one. Columbus, Chicago, Houston?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're good teams.
San Jose?
I still think Columbus has a real shot at the Eastern Conference playoffs. So I'm not even going to throw Columbus in that equation. Listen, is Chicago a bad team? Yes, but they went to Montreal and won on the road. So, Glenn, a bad team doesn't do that. The Houston Dynamo have won a couple games here under Wade Barrett. Bad teams don't do that. And that's what I'm getting at. Are they good teams? No. But for me to say they're bad teams, I just don't think Houston's going on the road and beating San Jose if they're a bad team. I don't think Chicago's going on the road and beating Montreal with Piatti and Drogba in that lineup. And I just, that's what I mean by any given weekend. It's just really prevalent to me at how every team has a quote-unquote chance of winning that weekend where you look around the world, I don't think that's always the case.
No, I agree with you on that, but I do think that sometimes the law of averages may catch up and you will get a win. I mean, when the Dynamo won in San Jose, it wasn't it may have been more the inability of San Jose to score goals based on the opportunities they had. Look, it's a win, and it's a win for the Dynamo. It was their first road win of the year. But anyway, let's move on to which game do you guys have this weekend? Which is the ESPN?
We are off this
that's right. This is an off weekend.
The international weekend.
Correct.
We are off. So, Glenn, I will be going to my first New England Revolution game as a fan since I retired.
That's awesome. That's going to be fun. That should be good fun for you. Isn't it good to go to games sometimes without having to work them and look at them from a different perspective?
That's actually a great question. I mean, I think the only difference from watching this game is I may have a beer in my hand instead of a microphone.
Well, that'll give you a different perspective for sure.
Yeah, so it depends on how many beers I have. That will give me a different perspective, to say the least.
Would that be a Bud Light?
Say that again?
Would that be a Bud Light?
I'm in Boston. Those St. Louis roots are long gone, pal.
Well, you know you have those St. Louis ties. No, but you know what I did? Honestly, I did this. I had an off night, and I sat in the field seats. And I'll tell you, it was a wonderful reminder to me of the perspective and what coaches see. Because it's completely different than what we get up in a booth, obviously up high, and spatially we can see things. But it was a great reminder to me to sit in field seats behind signage, right on the field, looking at the depth and perspective of that sight line and that lens.
Glenn, I think that's a great point. I think, as much as we're paid to be analysts and watch the sport and be critical when it's called upon and obviously applaud those when it happens, I'd be remiss not to say, I'm not naive enough to say the sport hasn't grown and this league hasn't grown in between the lines from the moment I retired in 2008. So, and that's, I think, a big part of this. So, in order for the sport to grow, you have to be critical and take it to the next level. But I'm also not going to sit here and tell you that the sport hasn't moved between the lines. The tools these teams are using and these franchises have now it's amazing to me at how far the sport has grown, and I'd say the league has grown in the 8 years since I've been retired. I just am going to enjoy going to an MLS game as a fan and not worry about having makeup on.
That's right, and you know what? It's actually guys like you who don't need makeup. It's guys like me that get called out by the fans where they call me a Botoxed lizard that does need makeup. And by the way, I look like a lizard, but I don't do Botox. I look like a lizard, but I don't do Botox. Oh, God. Colorado. What do you think made Colorado all of a sudden decide after all these years of mediocrity to go after a Jermaine Jones and a Tim Howard?
Oh, man, I think... Are you asking me why they went after those two players?
I'm just, not why they went after them, because they're both great players that can change teams, and we saw Jones change the New England Revolution. It's just interesting to me that, you know, staying at the same level of mediocrity for so many years in a row, yes, I know they won an MLS Cup 1 year, and then all of a sudden we decide to really make an investment in two players that can really change and have changed the dynamics of the team. You know, you just wonder, does somebody wake up one night and, hey, it's time to do this? It's interesting to me, the timing of it and how it happens.
Yeah, I think stars aligned. And what I mean by that is maybe there were sponsorship dollars to be had, and maybe there were sponsorship dollars leaving the table. Or maybe there was a sponsor that came in and said, we need a couple big-name players here if we're going to invest in the Colorado Rapids. Because when you think of this, how they got to Jermaine Jones, Tim Howard, they weren't necessarily first choices. Because if you remember, it was Alejandro Bedoya that, and I broke that during the draft, and then it was Polito, and there were a number of names before you got to a Jermaine Jones and Tim Howard. Jermaine Jones' situation, I think a lot of it is just stars aligning and being lucky and looking at it. He had no other choice because he didn't want to play in New England anymore, and if he was going to be offered the salary that he was offered, he wanted to leave, and Colorado stepped up. So I look at the Tim Howard signing as one that I think Paul Bravo would have to answer that. But I just wonder if it maybe was a sponsor or sponsorship. Because you're right, Glenn, you don't all of a sudden just wake up and make that decision. And secondly, they're two U.S. internationals. So the ironic part of that, there's something off the field that aligned for those two players to end up in Colorado.
Yeah, I agree with you, because it's not like there's a lack of funds there. I mean, it's a Kroenke team. It's interesting. Let's go to FC Dallas and Oscar Perea, and of course, what they've done. They're in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup final. How sad is it, though, to see a team like that who's having a great season and then being in three competitions, having their best player extracted to Turkey? First of all, mention a little bit about Oscar Perea and your thoughts on him as a manager.
I've always had a huge amount of respect for Oscar, and here's why. When someone coaching is a craft, and it is a skill, and you have to learn it. And he didn't all of a sudden just become a head coach overnight. He became an academy coach. And the one thing that I love about Oscar Perea is what he's doing with FC Dallas' academy, is he's making sure that every single player in that academy knows that the carrot at the end of the stick is the first team. And you've got an opportunity, and he's watching you at all times. They don't spend money in FC Dallas, obviously, with showing the sale of Castillo, and then obviously they just lost an academy player in Weston McKennie to Schalke.
Yep.
But how they utilize that youth and that talent, that is one feather in the cap, and one feather only, and that's in Oscar Perea.
Yep, and they have a clear identity, and if you're a youth player at FC Dallas, there is possibility, and I can't say that for all clubs in Major League Soccer. I think it's almost like some are going through the motions with their academies and that end of player development. Were you surprised that John Doyle, after 9 years, is out in San Jose as a general manager?
No, I wasn't. And quite frankly, and this is not a call for more firing, but this is a call, and Glenn, I know you've heard me say this for the 5 years I've been a TV analyst. We need more accountability and we need more pressure. Plain and simple. And what's remarkable to me in Major League Soccer is the lack of quote-unquote accountability at the general manager level. Because when you look at, and with all due respect to John Doyle, look at the general managers in the league in the last 12 years. How many of them have been fired? The coaches are fired. So how many general managers, technical directors are fired?
Yeah,
and
I agree.
So I'm not saying that you need to change technical directors and general managers every year. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is it can't always be the coach. Because if you're selling a coach a bag of goods, and that's the only bag of goods he can use, well, by definition, the general manager's equally accountable for the product on the field.
Agreed. I think it's sometimes very nebulous because these technical director slash GM jobs, a lot of the clubs don't make it clear who has the final say on players and hirings and firings and signings, and it becomes very nebulous. And it's all of us as a group, right? But we all know that somebody at the end of the day has to have the final yes or no on it. And that's why I think it's confusing to fans. It's confusing to fans. And I think we, with all due respect here in Houston to everybody involved in Houston, I think that's an area of cloudiness that makes it confusing to the fan. And all it needs is to be explained to people where the line and chain of command goes.
Well, it's just funny to me because how many times in this league, and let's be honest, leagues around the world, but leagues around the world, all you hear about is managers. You never hear about technical directors, general managers. In our league, when you sign a good player, how come you always see the general manager's name or the technical director's name?
Yeah.
Yet how often when signings don't work, it's blamed on the head coach? And listen, I'm not saying general managers don't have a place. I firmly believe every club needs a technical director, needs a general manager, because you have to have a club philosophy. You have to have a franchise philosophy, both on the business side and on the field. But I just don't think we've reached that maturation as a league on showing that accountability. And John Doyle did a heck of a job in San Jose. A huge part of his job was selling that stadium and getting that stadium built. No doubt about it. But as anything around the league, is the timing a little off? I think so. And Dominic Kinnear will tell you with anyone, he knows the clock's ticking on making the playoffs and making that team right. I just think San Jose looks at it, they got the stadium built, and I think they just looked at it and said, we need some fresh ideas coming in. Now, whether or not those fresh ideas coincide with Dominic Kinnear, that's yet to be seen.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because I know Dom and John Doyle are very, very close. And, you know, I've always seen a trend in this league where whenever a stadium's built, it almost seems as like it's an opportunity for everybody to kind of take their foot off the pedal. And, you know, there may be a drop-off in some things because of the stadium. The stadium is a wonderful veil maybe for other things that are going on with the club, and it might make – organizations and clubs, I think, relax. I think that happened a little bit here in Houston, without a
doubt.
Yeah,
I do think, though, Glenn, you and I would be a little unfair if we don't recognize how difficult it has been to get these stadiums built in some of these state legislatures and some of these cities.
Oh, listen, we lived it locally here.
Think it's human nature that they're like, you know what, we could take a breather. But I look at it as the other way. I really believe that when the stadium is built for your franchise, it's a rebirth. It's not the other way. And I think there should be more pressure. There should be more accountability. Stadiums should be filled at all times. And I think it's the other way. And I do think San Jose's looking at it in that manner. Because I think they're like, wait a minute, we've got a nice stadium here. It's built perfectly. The field's absolutely a carpet. We need to be in the playoffs. We need to be a successful team here. And so we need to freshen it up a little bit. And listen, like I said, Dominic Kinnear will tell you, he knows the clock's ticking.
Yep, it's pretty interesting out in San Jose. Taylor Twellman joining us, ESPN analyst. Last one before I let you go. Okay, so you and I have the good fortune of calling the NCAA College Cup, and it's going to be right here at BBVA Compass Stadium in Houston. You did play at Maryland briefly before you went on to your professional career in Germany. Just some thoughts on, you know, the college game and what it means in our country and how it's ingrained in so many, and maybe the excitement around Houston hosting it. And, you know, we're working hard to put people in the seats for that event.
Yeah, I fully expect Houston, just hearing what you guys have done already and where you're taking this College Cup, and just I expect it to be a great weekend. The thing about college soccer is interesting to me, Glenn, and I'll answer it first this way. And you know I'm vocal about the NCAA. I don't understand why the NCAA looks at men's and women's college soccer as if it's still in 1950. It is the only sport that the NCAA looks at and still treats it as if it's in the 1950s. 2.5 to 3 month season, multiple games a week. You can't have a spring season, while every other sport has joined the millennium. For whatever reason, the NCAA doesn't look at it that way. In saying that, there are some real good players and real good coaches in the college game, plain and simple. And too often when I hear people criticize college soccer, it's not the players. It has absolutely nothing to do with the coaches. It's what they have to work with. But I will promise you this. There was a Jordan Morris last year that scored 2 goals in the final, a player that represented the national team. There was a player in that game that ended up representing the national team in Brandon Vincent. So anyone that thinks the college game has no place in our soccer landscape is, one, either ignorant, or two, misinformed. It's just whether or not the NCAA can wake up and realize that the sport can grow and become a huge part of our development, because obviously a college education is so important to our youth. But if they could play a 7 to 8 month season, Glenn, then honestly, the sky's the limit for college soccer and developing players. I feel like, Glenn, it's not, I'm going to use, a lack of a better word, my duty, but I love calling the College Cup. I think it's important. And I also, I played in the College Cup my freshman year at Maryland. It's just a huge part of soccer in our country, and I just hope it joins the millennium and joins 2016 and having a proper schedule.
I agree with you, and I think it would be very interesting that coaches would have a lot less pressure on them. I mean, you're right about the condensed schedule. It's like you blink your eyes, it's over. One key player gets injured, your whole season changes. The quality of the games would improve, so many things. But then again, does the NCAA really care about developing soccer players? I guess we'll know in the future. Listen, thank you very much, as always, for coming on. We'll talk soon. And as always, stay cool. And enjoy that game in New England, by the way.
I will, pal.
Have fun doing
that. Talk to you, Glenn.
Thanks, Taylor. As always, appreciate you joining the show here. All right, quick word here for Bud Light. I speak as the host of Soccer Matters. Today I'm speaking on behalf of my favorite political party, the Bud Light Party. Now, people say the country is divided, that we disagree on everything, but it's not true. We agree on a lot. Like puppy videos. Everybody likes puppy videos, 3-day weekends, free parking, queso, and margaritas. You know what else everybody loves? Beer. Nothing brings America together like Bud Light. Raise one right now. Join the Bud Light Party and myself Wednesday nights at 7 Central Time for the best in soccer talk at Soccer Matters on ESPN.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. Quick word here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John Daspit and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-4878. Whether your accident is car, boat, motorcycle, industrial, construction, even plant, refinery, or 18-wheeler, the Daspit Law Firm will assure you that they will treat your case as if it's their own. DaspitLaw.com. The Daspit Law Firm will work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-4878. Tonight we wrap our show up in style. He, for me, has been the most outstanding player this year for the Houston Dynamo. Dynamo midfielder Alex, along with Edgar Valise, will join us now here. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us on ESPN 97.5.
Thank you for the invitation, Glenn. Alex, mandos sus saludos, Glenn.
Hello, saludos. Aquí es Alex, medio campista de Houston Dynamo. Una buena tarde.
Well, first thing I guess we'll ask Alex is just to talk about the overall, you know, let's face it, the disappointment of the season right now.
Alex, pues vamos a iniciar con la temporada de presente. Pues que... ¿Cómo que identifica usted como la causa de la manera que pues ha salido la temporada, no ha salido como todos esperaba? Pues a qué indica eso, por qué cree que pues ha salido los resultados como ha salido.
Sí, empezamos la temporada muy bien, pero con muchos empates y tomando los goles de los minutos, ¿no? Y eso perjudicó un poco nosotros y seguimos igual, vamos a seguir, siempre hacemos resultados, no tenemos la consistencia de mantener sentados y eso es de claro.
So initially we kind of started off well, but then we had quite a few draws that were kind of thrown together, giving up late goals. That's just going to affect you. We didn't have the consistency that you need to compete at this level, so that was an issue. Overall, it's just things have not worked out the way we started, and after that start, it's very disappointing that things have gone this way.
Does he feel that mentally the players are all there? In other words, every game I see him play, I think he comes to play every day, and I think everybody's recognized that he's just got this fire. And, you know, this guy, when he plays Alex, we know he's going to commit 100%. Does he feel like the entire team has that mentality?
Alex, pues cuando uno lo mira jugar a usted, se nota que usted siempre entrega lo máximo, que cuando vos entras a la cancha, pues que se entrega todo. Siente que el equipo también comparte eso, que el equipo mentalmente tiene esa misma característica.
E é difícil falar para outros jogadores, porque cada jogador tem sua mentalidade, não? E eu tenho a minha mentalidade na semana, 100% na semana, focado para o dia de partida, para quando chegar um dia de partida, me dá 100%, porque é meu trabalho, não? E me gusta entrar na cancha e fazer de todo para que possa buscar o resultado positivo. É complicado, alguns jogadores têm outras mentalidades, não? Eu abro por mim, não? Toda semana treinando 100%, com a mentalidade de boa, vou chegar dia de partida e me dar o máximo 100% de minha parte, não?
So it's tough for me to speak for other players. That definitely touched on my mentality. My mentality is through training, through every game, I just give it my all. That's kind of what brought me to this position. That's kind of what's given me the season that I have today. So while it's tough to speak for other players, I know that on my part, I give it my all at everything, at training. I leave it all out there. It's my job at the end of the day. So it's my job to make sure that I put the best effort and help the team in any way I can.
Dynamo midfielder Alex joining us, having an outstanding season from Sao Paulo, Brazil, and of course, translating also for us is Edgar Valise. As we continue this interview on, ask Alex if he can just talk about what it's like to grow up in a country like Brazil, where soccer is priority. It is number one, and there's so much history there with great players. What is it like to grow up in Brazil with that soccer culture?
Okay, Alex, ¿qué tú practicas de Brasil? ¿Cómo fue, pues, desarrollarse ya desde niño y, pues, nacer y crecer en ese ambiente donde el fútbol es todo, el fútbol es la vida? ¿Cómo se siente, pues, venir ahí?
Un país muy grande con muchos talentos y en Brasil tuve muchas oportunidades y me fui a subir. Assim como profissional, foi hecho em Suíça.
So there's definitely a lot of talent in a country like that, with a lot of opportunity. But if you definitely want to make your mark in the game, if you want to just keep getting better as a player, sometimes that's going to take you elsewhere. For me, that opportunity came with Switzerland. That's where I was able to develop my game. That's where I was able to improve as a player. And now, unfortunately, that has brought me here to the United States.
Yeah, Alex went to Wohlen in Switzerland in 2008, spent a number of years there. Who's his favorite Brazilian player of all time?
Alex, ¿cuál es tu jugador favorito de Brasil?
Mi jugador favorito de Brasil es Rivaldo.
¿Y por qué?
Porque la característica de jogo dele é um pouco por a posição ser parecida com a minha. Sempre mi papai Matico me ensinava como Rivaldo movimentava na cancha, a inteligência que tinha ele, a responsabilidade e o profissional que é Rivaldo, não? Então, me focava muito em Rivaldo e todavia me foco nele, não? Vendo alguns vídeos e me inspiro em Rivaldo.
So I definitely have to say Rivaldo. He's somebody that I kind of tried to mirror growing up. That's somebody my dad kind of pushed on me just to approach the game with his professionalism, with his demeanor, just always going, giving it your all. So that's something that I've adopted even to this day. I still look at tape of how he approached the game, and he's just an inspiration to me.
Alex joining us, the Dynamo midfielder here on ESPN 97.5, also Edgar Valise of Dynamo Communications. How difficult has it been for Alex this year, you know, with the results the way they are, to continue to try and lift himself and play? Because it is tough when you're not having the best of seasons results-wise.
Alex, pues aunque los resultados no se han dado, pues cómo se anima uno para seguir dándole todo, cada partido, cada minuto.
Lo más importante es entrar en la cancha y hacer tu trabajo bien hecho, porque es tu carrera, ¿no? Mesmo si no estamos viviendo la temporada, pero tenemos que buscar lo mejor para cada uno, ¿no? Yo tengo que buscar lo mejor para mí, y otro jugador tiene que buscar lo mejor para otro jugador, porque es nuestro trabajo, ¿no? Para buscar un contrato, por estar bien, ¿no? Y yo pienso así, porque tenemos que, mesmo si no llegamos a los playoffs, pero tenemos que intentar mucho, ¿no? Porque es nuestro que está en la cancha, ¿no?
So, yeah, it is tough, but it's my job. At the end of the day, this is what I get paid to do. So I basically go into every game just with that mindset that this is what I have to do, and I'm playing for this contract, I'm playing for the next contract. You just never know, as a soccer player, who's watching. So it's also up to everyone to give their all. It has been tough on everyone, and while the playoffs are still a possibility, we know the road that lies ahead is pretty tough. So it's challenging, but it's something that I put forth the effort just due to my background.
How about something that the fans don't know about Alex that they'd be interested in?
Alex, hay algo único, pues algo que lo destaca. A lo mejor afuera de la cancha, que a lo mejor los aficionados no conocen de usted.
¿Cómo? No entendí mucho.
Sí, hay algo, una característica que lo destaca afuera de la cancha, que a lo mejor los aficionados no conozcan de usted.
¿Fuera de la cancha?
Sí.
Ah, fuera de la cancha es una persona sencilla, humilde y así, ¿no? Me voy bien con todos, con la cultura, y soy una persona humilde.
So off the field, I mean, I'm an individual that's pretty humble, I keep to myself, and I don't approach the game that way. It's a little different on the field, but off the field, I'm just like your average person. I like to get along with people, I like to be social, I like to definitely experience life and the joys that come with it.
Well, Edgar, please tell Alex we thank him very much for his time on the program. We also have enjoyed watching his level of professionalism this year for the Houston Dynamo. And again, thank you guys for coming on the program.
Sure. Alex, pues, se despide. Glenn dice que muchas gracias por acompañarlo y que muchas gracias por todo lo que ha entregado usted en la cancha esta temporada por el Dynamo.
Nada, y muchas gracias a usted por traducir y a él y lo programa. Una buena tarde.
Thank you both. Edgar, thank you. Alex, thank you. We appreciate you coming on the program tonight.
Sure thing. Thanks for the invitation, Bob.
Gracias.
Thank you. Gracias. Bye.
Thank you, Alex. So that's Alex. What an outstanding season he has had this year for the Dynamo. By the way, what did he say? Says he's playing for his contract. That kind of goes into the attitude that he's brought. All right, that'll do it for tonight here as we close it out tonight here. Quick reminder for Amigo Energy. Summer's here. It means you have to not only sweat watching your favorite soccer team, but also your energy bill. Amigo Energy has a solution for that. Sign up for Amigo Energy Basics 24. You'll receive a $50 bill credit exclusively for Soccer Matters listeners. Now, if you're moving, call us first. If you're up for a renewal, look us up and switch. Did you know Amigo Energy is a public utility commission 5-star rated provider? That's right. You get both great rates and great service from Amigo Energy. So don't delay. Go to www.amigoenergy.com/soccermatters. Tell them you heard it on Soccer Matters and sign up for Basics 24 today, 888-995-9299. You want to save money? It's Amigo Energy, 888-995-9299. For details on the $50 offer, go to www.amigoenergy.com/soccermatters. That does it for tonight. As always, I thank Tyler Scott for his work producing this show. Also, you can follow me at Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Facebook Soccer Matters, and get over now to glendavissoccer.com. We're going to be posting over there, fresh content over there. The website is up and running again. a lot of great things in the future for us as soccer fans. All right, that'll do it for tonight. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling in.
ESPN 97.5.